Chapter 10. How I Left Prison. All this happened during my last year in prison. The last year was almost as memorable as the first one, especially the last days in prison. But why go into detail? I only remember that that year, in spite of my impatience for the end of my time, I found life easier than during all my previous years in prison. In the first place, I had by then a number of friends and well-wishers in the prison who had quite made up their minds that I was a good man. Many of them were devoted to me and loved me sincerely. The pioneer almost shed tears when he saw me and my comrade off on the day we left the prison, and when, after leaving, we spent a month in the town, he came to see us almost every day, with no object except to have a look at us. There were some of the convicts, however, who remained morose and churlish to the end, and seemed, God knows why, to begrudge having to speak to me. It seemed as though a kind of barrier existed between us. I enjoyed more privileges towards the end than in the early years of my life in prison. I discovered some acquaintances and even old schoolfellows of mine among the officers serving in the town. I renewed my acquaintance with them. Through their good offices, I was able to obtain larger supplies of money, was able to write home, and even to have books. It was some years since I had read a book, and it is difficult to describe the strange and agitating impression of the first book I read in the prison. I remember I began reading in the evening when the ward was locked up, and I read all night long till daybreak. It was a magazine. It was as though news had come to me from another world. My former life rose up before me, full of light and colour, and I tried from what I read to conjecture how far I had fallen behind. Had a great deal happened while I had been away? What emotions were stirring people up now? What questions were occupying their minds? I pored over every word, tried to read between the lines and to find secret meanings and allusions to the past. I looked for traces of what had stirred us up in my time. And how sad it was for me to realize how remote I was from this new life, how cut off I was from it all. I should have to get used to everything afresh, to make acquaintance with the new generation again. I pounced with special eagerness on articles signed by men I had known and been intimate with. But there were new names, too. There were new leaders, and I was in eager haste to make their acquaintance, and I was vexed that I had the prospect of so few books to read, and that it was so difficult to get hold of them. In the old days, under our old major, it was positively dangerous to smuggle a book into prison. If there had been a search, there would immediately have been questions about where the book had come from, where one had got it from. It would be surmised that one had acquaintances in the town, and what could I have answered to such inquiries? And therefore, living without books, I had unconsciously become absorbed in myself, set myself problems, tried to solve them, worried over them sometimes. But there's no describing all that. I had entered the prison in the winter, and therefore I was to leave it and be free in the winter too, on the anniversary of my arrival. With what impatience I looked forward to the winter, with what enjoyment at the end of the summer I watched the leaves withering and the grass fading on the steps. And now the summer had passed, the autumn wind was howling. At last the first flakes of snow fluttered down. At last the winter I had looked forward to for so long had come. At times my heart began throbbing dumbly at the great thought of freedom, but strange to say, as time went on and the end came nearer, the more and more patient I became. In the last few days I was really surprised and reproached myself. It seemed to me that I had become quite unconcerned and indifferent. Many of the convicts who met me in the yard in our leisure time would speak to me and congratulate me. "You'll soon be going out to freedom, Alexander Petrovich. Soon, soon. You'll leave us all alone, poor devils." "And you, Martinov, will your time soon be up?" I would respond. "Me? Ah, well, I have another 7 years to pine away." And he would sigh to himself, stand still and look lost in thought, as though staring into the future. Yes, many joyfully and sincerely congratulated me. It seemed to me as though all of them began to be more cordial to me. They had evidently begun to think of me no longer as one of themselves. They were already taking leave of me. Kaczynski, one of the educated Poles, a quiet and gentle young man, was, like me, fond of walking about the yard in his leisure time. He hoped by exercise and fresh air to preserve his health and to counteract the evil effect of the stifling nights in the prison ward. "I am impatiently looking forward to your release," he said with a smile, meeting me one day as we walked. "When you leave the prison, I shall know that I have exactly a year before I leave." I may mention here, parenthetically, that our dreams and our long divorce from the reality made us think of freedom as somehow freer than real freedom, and that is than it actually is. The convicts had an exaggerated idea of real freedom, and that is so natural, so characteristic of every convict. Any officer's servant was looked on by us almost as in his way a king, almost as the ideal of a free man, compared with the convicts, simply because he was not shaven and went about unfettered and unguarded. On the evening before the last day, I walked in the dusk for the last time all round our prison by the fence. How many thousands of times I had walked along that fence during those years. Here, behind the barracks, during my first year in prison, I used to pace up and down, alone, forlorn and dejected. I remember how I used to count then how many thousand days were before me. Good God, how long ago it was. Here, in this corner, our eagle had lived in captivity. Here, Pietrov often used to meet me. Even now, he was constantly at my side. He would run up, and as though guessing my thoughts, would walk in silence beside me, seeming as though he was secretly wondering. Mentally, I took leave of the blackened, rough-timbered walls of our prison. How unfriendly they had seemed to me then, in those first days. They, too, must have grown older by now, but I saw no difference in them. And how much youth lay uselessly buried within those walls. What mighty powers were wasted here in vain. After all, one must tell the whole truth. Those men were exceptional men. Perhaps they were the most gifted, the strongest of our people, but their mighty energies were vainly wasted, wasted abnormally, unjustly, hopelessly. And who was to blame? Whose fault was it? That's just it. Who was to blame? Early next morning, as soon as it began to get light, before the convicts went out to work, I walked through the prison wards to say goodbye to all the convicts. Many strong, horny hands were held out cordially to me. Some, but they were not many, shook hands quite like comrades. Others thoroughly realized that I would at once become quite a different sort of man from them. They knew that I had friends in the town, that I was going straight from the prison to the gentry, and that I should sit down with them as their equal. They understood that. And although they said goodbye to me in a friendly and cordial way, they did not speak to me as to a comrade, but as to a gentleman. Some turned away from me and sullenly refused to respond to my greeting. Some even looked at me with a sort of hatred. The drum beat sounded, and everyone went out to work, and I remained at home. Sushilov had got up almost before anyone that morning and was doing his utmost to get tea ready for me before he went. Poor Sushilov. He cried when I gave him my convict clothes, my shirts, my fetter wrappers and some money. "It's not that that I want, not that," he said, controlling his trembling lips with difficulty. "It's dreadful losing you, Alexander Petrovich. What shall I do here without you?" I said goodbye for the last time to Akim Akimich, too. "You'll be going soon, too," I said to him. "I've a long time, a very long time to be here still," he muttered as he pressed my hand. I threw myself on his neck, and we kissed. 10 minutes after the convicts had gone out, we, too, left the prison, never to return. My comrade had entered prison with me, and we left together. We had to go straight to the blacksmith's to have our fetters knocked off, but no guard followed us with a gun. We went accompanied only by a sergeant. Our fetters were removed by our convicts in the engineer's workshop. While they were doing my comrade, I waited, and then I, too, went up to the anvil. The blacksmiths turned me round so that my back was towards them, lifted my leg up, and laid it on the anvil. They roused themselves, tried to do their best as skillfully as possible.
"The rivet! The rivet! Turn that first of all!" the senior commanded. "Hold it! That's it, that's right! Hit it with the hammer now!"
The fetters fell off. I picked them up. I wanted to hold them in my hand, to look at them for the last time. I already seemed to be wondering that they could have been on my legs a minute before.
Well, with God's blessing, with God's blessing, said the convicts in coarse, abrupt voices, in which, however, there was a note of pleasure. Yes, with God's blessing. Freedom. New life. Resurrection from the dead. What a glorious moment.